Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome to another episode of the QuakeCast. Today, we have a very special guest. We have Joshua Skelton, who is one half of the development team who brought us Delver, a new Steam game that is available right now. But he's also involved with the Quake community.
Yeah, Joshua has created a suite of Quake tools that are kind of modern, command line only versions of, you know, ways to, you know, extract textures, put together WAD files and all kinds of stuff. So we'll let him talk about that. Also, Joshua is involved in the Quake Awards. We'll touch on that a little bit. And he also is a prolific streamer. And not only does he talk about Delver in his streams, but he also will troubleshoot Quake or create content for Quake on live stream. So without further ado, here's Joshua.
So I've been thinking about this. When did I first play Quake? And I think it was, well, it was probably in 96, actually, right around when Quake first released. I think I was a young, freshly driver's licensed teenager, and I drove to the mall because that's what we did. And there was an electronics store, and I bought the shareware copy of Quake because I didn't have a lot of money. And I took it home to my 486 and promptly could not play it. So then I went back to, I know, right? But that gave me motivation to go back to my summer job and earn a little bit more money and upgrade my machine to where I could actually play it. I think that involved me upgrading my 486 to an actual Pentium.
And so did you ever play any multiplayer, or did you just play single player and just kind of, you know, did you ever do any mapping for it back in the day, or just, you just had your experience and kind of came back to it later?
Well, that's a funny thing. So I lived in a very rural place, and we had, like, I think we had AOL at the time, or Juno, one of the dial-up services that wasn't super great. And so kind of the online multiplayer was out of the question for me. For the longest time, I probably ran against bots, which is weird. That was like my first introduction to modding, was downloading, I think, the Reaper bot was, I think, what we were playing back in the day. I can't really quite remember.
Yeah, that sounds right.
The early popular bots, yeah. So it probably was Reaper.
Yeah, so it was sad little Joshua in his bedroom playing against the Reaper bots for hours on end. Later, probably several years down the road, when I had, you know, a better summer job and I actually had a machine that was a little bit better, my friends and I would actually do LAN parties probably once a month or so. And we would drag all of our machines to one of our parents' houses and set up. And we played at that time, probably a combination of Quake and Half-Life.
Right. Yeah. Those were the days. I love that stuff.
Yeah. And actually, notoriously, I guess we kind of got in trouble at high school because for some reason, all of us started showing up an hour before school started. And what we had done is, on the network drive, we had gotten a copy of Quake uploaded there, the full version. And we renamed it to notepad.exe so we could get past all the school security.
Nice.
And so we would just run like 12-player local multi-Quake in the mornings before school. And it was rad. That was probably some of the best times I've had with Quake.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. Jinx. But that means you can let me throw this out to you. Considering it sounds like you've been around as far as gaming goes with Quake and Half-Life and whatnot. What was it about Quake, though, that was so alluring? Because you're still in the community today.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people say, you know, they got into it because of the whole Lovecraft thing. To be perfectly honest with you, I didn't discover Lovecraft until 2005, 2006. So it was just weird. It was different. I just liked the dark strangeness of it. The creatures I couldn't really pin down. And it was, I don't know. It was, I don't know. Like, I just, it was like a 3D experience, which is really kind of mind blowing. I also love Doom a lot. They both have different places in my heart, but I spent the most time with Quake than Doom.
Excellent. Yeah, and it sounds like multiplayer had a little bit to do with that too, right?
Oh, certainly. I would love to say that I was a mapper back in the day, but that was, I've still not released a map yet. I think it was probably PC Gamer released like a very early version of, was it WorldCraft or I forget what the editor was. I came on the PC Gamer disc because that's how I got a lot of my software because my internet wasn't super great. And I made some very clunky maps. I learned like how to make box rooms, and then I learned the CSG tool, and I kind of slammed that around everywhere. And that as you may know, doesn't result in very usable or compilable things. But it was a lot of fun.
That's cool. Well, you know, you may not have made maps, but you've made other things for Quake. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. So let's jump forward like 20-some-odd years when I have a slightly more... I guess I know what I'm doing a little bit better. By trade, I am a software engineer. So that's what I went to school for. That's what I've done professionally. I also have a strong passion for art. When I went to university, I had to choose between art and programming, and I thought programming would pay the bills. So that's the route I went. But I never gave up on art. So a lot of my stuff involves kind of the marriage of the two, which is where Quake Tools comes from. Quake Tools builds on my... I wrote a Python library to load and work with Quake file formats, because I guess at the time that was interesting to me. I wanted to pull in Quake files into Blender. And I started off with the actual level files, the BSP files. And then that was also, I moved on to the MDL files. And then now I think as we're talking, I have support for all the vanilla Quake files. So I've pulled in everything I can load in demos. It's quite interesting. I guess the nice side effect of having this robust API to write software with is I can usually make a new Quake tool in about an hour or two, which is pretty darn quick. And I have tools for working with various archives like the PAC format or the WAD format. I have, I think, Dumptruck, you pushed me to release some tools to make sprite stuff, which has been a lot of fun.
It's
super rad to see just the getting creative folks tools to make stuff is so rewarding. And just watching the stuff you folks make with it is really, it really makes my day.
Well, I'm forever in your debt for demystifying the secret doors. RC, secret doors are kind of, it's not that they're poorly programmed or implemented in Quake. It's just that they're kind of, they're a bit of a left turn as far as a entity. So they don't behave the way other entities work and of the other doors. And so Joshua, took it upon himself very kindly, did a stream where he kind of just sat there and figured out, okay, well, what is this? Okay, so this goes this way and this opens this way and this is why it is. And he's got the source code and he's looking at the source code of Quake, the engine. And then kind of extrapolating that to QC, and I gotta say there's no way I would have figured all that out. And so that's just another example of how Joshua kind of dips his foot in the community and just like in 1 hour will create something that's super useful.
Very cool.
So it seems like you like to troubleshoot and problem solve, Joshua. So what are some of your kind of Quake related, things on your wish list that we might see in the future?
Oh, things on my wish list. Oh, goodness.
Because I know Blender. I know you've really played a lot with the Blender tools and kind of tweaking the IO there. So is that kind of on the horizon or?
Yeah. So I would like to solidify my Blender tools so that you can import and export Quake MDLs in a relatively painless fashion. There is a pretty good Blender plugin right now. It's not, I think it could be improved. I guess I kind of suffer from, there's a programmer term called not invented here syndrome, where if you haven't written the code, you look at it and you're like, this is crap. And I know I'm suffering from that a little bit. So I think Bill Curry is the author of the QFMDL Blender add-on, which is actually a great add-on. So no shade or anything thrown there. I would like to play around with my BSP importer. Folks have requested being able to modify BSP files in Blender, which kind of makes my brain spin a little bit, but there might be things you can do there. I'd also like, I have a VS Code extension for Quake C, which would basically modernize how we write Quake C for mods, which could be really cool. I'd like to work on that a lot. There are some bugs that I would like to fix And I believe the developer of the FTE Quake, Spike, he also has debug support for the FTE engine. And I would really love to be able to have my my extension talk to his debugger and actually allow you to attach to a running instance of Quake and debug the Quake C as you run it, which is like a very modern workflow. And I, as far as I know, that Spike's tools are the only ones that do that right now. And I would love to add that to my extension as well.
Well, you've got a fledgling Quake C, quote unquote, air quote coder that would love to see that as well. And the VS Code thing, I when you had mentioned that before, I had looked it up, and I think I didn't log in or download, but I got just took a look at VS Code. And what I ended up doing is landing on Atom. And so I've taught myself Atom, but I'll switch over as soon as you have that stuff ready. I'll definitely jump into VS Code and
oh, sure. They're both built on Electron. So it should be pretty easy to, to jump back and forth between. Some of the nice things I have right now are code navigation. So you can say right click on a variable and say, hey, where is this defined? And it'll pop you to where it's defined. Or conversely, you can say, where is this variable used? And it could show you that. So those are some nice things. I have some very basic IntelliSense. So it'll tell you if things aren't correct or if you're using them incorrectly. That can be definitely enhanced as well.
That would help me tremendously.
Yeah. And I guess I should... I don't know, like a disclaimer or not. I in the past I did work for Microsoft and I did do some VS Code work. So I don't know, like I'm not promoting them. I'm no longer affiliated with them. I just have some experience in the past and I'm just trying to put it to good use.
Great. Helps everybody.
Well, I got to know, Joshua, after all this time that has passed between, you know, playing Quake back then and you know, coming back to it now to do some tools and stuff for it, what made you return to the community to build this stuff?
If I'm being truly honest, I think one day I was surfing YouTube and I came across Daz's YouTube channel. I'm like, oh,
yes,
people still play Quake. And he was just talking about cool maps. I'm like, I like cool maps. I'll watch a little bit of this. And then over the course of like, I want to say 2016, I discovered, hey, there is still a very healthy and robust Quake community around. And I kind of lurked there for a while. And then I forget when I started actually speaking up a little bit. Cause I didn't really want to say much until I actually had something to show. So I was kind of quiet for a long time.
Well, one thing that he did do was he took, and this, again, watching someone code and create something before your eyes on a stream is pretty impressive. And he took, now I'm going to tile ed, and he converted that and created a way that you can make tiles. And this will segue into the Delver conversation, but you take tiles and make a little tiny bits and pieces of maps and then have an easy way to create a map very quickly. And that was really impressive to watch. It didn't really take off in the community, but I have a feeling that if people really took a dive into it, that they'd have a lot of fun with it and it'd be useful. So we'll see if that kind of resurfaces in the future. But again, just watching Joshua stream and create the stuff in such a kind of a short amount of time is really fun and really, and you learn a lot. I mean, I picked up a lot by watching you.
Yeah, that's kind of you to say. Sometimes I worry like I'm this crazy, like mad whirling dervish, just like spitting out stuff.
Well, you are. Yeah, you are that. But
because I guess this is my free time and I want to have fun. So I just kind of work on a project. Like I'll get these ideas stuck in my brain and like they're like scratching the back of like my conscious all the time. And I just have to get them out. So I try to write the code, just get a good working example of it out. And if I want to see if it hooks me or hooks other people. So specifically the 2D tile map to Quake map is really cool. It is inspired by how we made maps for Delver, because the Delver level editor is pretty darn fast for what it is. And I'm so comfortable in that. Yeah, I've been working it for 5 years. So I can spit out maps in, you know, it's like an hour or so. And I'm interested in trying to develop different methods of making things. I know people always say, you know, like the biggest, I guess, even the developers of Quake said the big difference between Quake and Doom is verticality. And I guess I will argue that verticality, as long as you have a sense of verticality, actual verticality doesn't matter that much. Don't at me.
No, it makes sense. So, I mean, everything in game design and design in general really is all about illusion. So as long as you create that illusion, that's what's important.
Yeah, totally. That has been my experience working on like this Delver as a side project, is learning how to be scrappy and to fake everything that we possibly can, because that's a lot easier than doing it the right way.
So, you know, let's talk about Delver a little bit here.
Sure.
You know, in 2014, I actually discovered this game, believe it or not.
Oh, cool.
Delver was actually discovered by me in sort of the infancy of my channel. But when I saw the game on Steam, I was blown away because I love the, pixel art style art mixed with the dungeon 3D, you know, style of combat and everything.
Yeah.
So when I saw it, I pretty much bought it sight unseen. And I actually have a couple of Let's Plays up on my YouTube channel.
Oh, no. I'll have to go find those.
Yeah, they're actually, this is old, so a lot of viewers of my channel often say, like, RC, it's really weird to watch your old videos because of how different they are. So you might notice that when you're watching these, but regardless, July 2014, fast forward to 2018 was when I saw the news that you were finally releasing the final version of the game.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about like the beginnings of Delver, sort of what was the inspiration and kind of like how was the early access stuff for you as well?
Oh my goodness. I guess we are getting into like this. Say, hey, Joshua, what have you been up to the past 5 years? Okay. Let's grab a drink and let's talk. Okay. So I want to say my partner on Delver, Chad, began working on Delver in 2012, I want to say. And it was a very simple Raycaster, actually. It wasn't even what it is now. It was a Raycaster dungeon prototype that I forget. I think it was roughly based on a prototype Notch did. And my partner wanted to figure out, how would I do that? How would I code that? How would I make that work? And he started posting on a forum back in the day called TIGSource, which is still around. It stands for the Independent Game Source. And I had a job where I could check that fairly often throughout the day. So I was, and I came across this project, which was really interesting. It was, you know, I think he called it, Dungeoneer at that point in time. Mm. And it was really cool. It was very programmer art, but it was a lot of fun because it was procedural. And at that time, there wasn't a procedural first-person game that I knew of, and I was really excited by it. And I noticed that it was a Java jar file that he was distributing. So you just double click it and the game would run. But if you're a programmer, you know that the jar files are just a zip file. So if you right click on it and say unzip, I got all the assets out of it. And I started replacing the various textures. And I said, hey, on the forum, I said, hey, what do you think about this? I did a quick pass on these and I made a little scene. And he's like, oh, that's really cool. And probably maybe 6 months later, he was selling an Android version and he was earning enough money off the Android version to bring me on as a contract artist. And the sales picked up from there. And I got to the point where eventually he pulled me on as partner. And when he brought me on as partner, the intention was to just replace every single asset, which was going to be a huge, labor of love. And around this time as well is when Steam announced the green box or the green light program.
Right.
Yeah. And the initial days of Steam green light was just clicking a button. So one of our community members signed us up for green light, but it was underneath his account.
I'm sorry, just to interrupt you real quick, Joshua, for those who don't know green light, because it doesn't exist anymore, right?
They are actively phasing it out. I don't think you cannot enter it anymore, but yeah, green light was a program that Valve rolled out for Steam that allowed people to submit games for the community consideration to promote into a full Steam title. So this was Valve thinking about how they would no longer be the gatekeepers of what gets onto Steam.
Right.
And there was some magic algorithm. And if you were lucky, you went from a green light to like, hey, you're a product on Steam. So what happened was this community member of ours signed us up for Greenlight, but it was underneath his Steam account, which he wasn't a developer. So we had to contact Valve and we had to prove to them that we were, in fact, the actual developers. And we put out Delver on our account on Greenlight. This was, again, before the $99 fee. So it was a little bit of a, It was kind of a mess, and we just sat out there. We sat out there for a year on green light, because our intention was just to prevent this sort of thing from happening again. And we got greenlit without really trying. We have a very wonderful and lovely community that's kind of helped push us through that process. So our fun little side project became a second job overnight. This was probably around 2013, 2014.
It's really cool, though. I mean, it's obviously must have been one of your dreams to actually create a game, you know, because, you know, obviously you played Quake. You went on to work at Microsoft, and you eventually came back to Quake to work, write tools and that kind of thing. But this must have been a dream of yours come true to actually work on a game and put one out.
Oh, completely. Yeah, I've always wanted to make games. So after I graduated, I went right into enterprise software development. So that is so I worked for Lexmark and I worked for Microsoft doing non-game stuff. It's very interesting as a software engineer, but it's not very exciting. Like on a gaming podcast, talking about like printer services and stuff, you're like,
right?
People's eyeballs are rolling back. I'm like going to sleep right now.
Wait a minute. No, it's fascinating. Come on.
Yeah, but no, it let me become a good software engineer, but writing code all day made me excited to go home and work on art on side projects at night. And Delver existed that way until the very end. I think maybe the last 9 months of Delver, I was actually full time on it. So all like through my Lexmark career, through my Microsoft career, I was working on Delver on the side.
Interesting. So now Delver's out in the wild. It's still available. It's a blast, by the way. And I will say, just as an aside, and I think Joshua already knows this, I've only played Delver on my couch using Big Picture and the Steam controller, because I'm kind of one of those weirdos that likes the Steam controller.
Like, well, cool.
There might be like four of us, but I just tried it. I'm like, oh, this would probably work with the controller. And my kids have the Xbox controller, so they always steal it. So I, you know, happy to try it. And I've had a great time playing Delver. I don't get very far. People will have heard on the other podcast that, you know, I'm more of a Quaker than a gamer, although, you know,
sure.
I love the game industry and I follow it fairly closely, but I don't play a lot, you know, but Quake, that's a whole nother story. So, but Delver was great. You know, as a couch experience, it works really well. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we try to design a pretty tight experience. Like especially with role playing games, there's this instinct to throw everything in that you possibly can. Like people will just flip open like, you know, Advanced Dungeons & Dragons second edition like manuals and say, hey, look at like these 13 pole arms. Why don't you have these in the game? And I'm like, well, to be honest, I would rather each weapon be distinct and not have this kind of very like fuzzy like, you know, continuum of weapon. So we're fighting that urge. And yeah, if you really know what you're doing, you can probably beat Delver in just around a couple hours. But the problem is, you know, you have to like you have to play and accumulate knowledge, understand the systems and kind of what we're going to throw at you at any given level. And you know, it's always the RNG, right? That's a big thing between, you know, a game like Quake and a game like Delver is procedural. A lot of the level chunks I've designed by hand. But some of the level pieces are actually designed by the computer. We kind of slot them together in hopefully an interesting way. But with Quake, you know, you have it's always deterministic. So whenever you load a level, you know what you're going to get. You can vary it with skill level, and that's always kind of cool to see how people treat the different skills. Yeah, so something that's always fascinated me with Quake mapping is the skills and how much you can actually change with the skills. I think, like, there are certain... Like you should be able to certain types of brushes, be able to make them appear and disappear on different skill levels. And I've always wondered if people have played around with the idea of actually changing the level structure itself based on skill level. I'm sure folks have. I my knowledge of the Quake maps is pretty limited to maybe the past 5 or so years is when I've really been paying attention.
Yeah, I think it's not a huge. It's not something that people do regularly, but I know that has been exploited. I'm not thinking of the maps right now, but I think part of the challenge is that each individual player is going to have, you know, like I usually only play skill one because I'm terrible at games.
Sure.
And I'm old, right? And I'm old. I'm a little rusty. So, but I think, you know, I'd have to replay it to see that other version of the map. So maybe that could be part of it. If it's only, you know, I know Sock, always kind of hopes that people will replay his maps and try to 100% them, and he'll have different aspects. I wouldn't actually say geometry, but I'm sure there's part of it in there. But that is an interesting, you know, concept that people listening should give it a shot and see how they can change things based on skill.
Sure. I think my only concern, I think there might be lighting artifacts and other things like that, having like brushes pop in, pop out. But, you know, it is something to explore, I think.
Yeah, very cool.
So on the Delver topic, though, I do want to ask you real quick, Joshua. You know, 5 years obviously is a good chunk of time.
Yes.
For anything, whether it's, you know, music, movie, game, whatever. So what was the hardest aspect during the development of that? What was your biggest challenge?
Oh my goodness! So in that course of 5 years, I changed jobs. I moved across the country. I got married. I bought a house. I had 2 children.
Wow!
So yeah, a lot of life happened in that 5 years. And also, my partner on the game also moved across the country, and you know, had similar life experiences. So just trying to manage time management. Right, that's the big thing, is holding down a day job, having a family, and then somehow, you know, peeling off time to work on this thing I'm super passionate about. But it usually gets like the wee hours of the morning, and I'm just, you know, tired and uncreative and trying to figure out how to effectively use my time. I guess another big thing too that we didn't really realize going into it is community management. You know, we both are engineers by trade on this project, and I am artist by passion. But like talking to the community and setting expectations was something we kind of learned the hard way. And basically, after my first son was born, the year following that, the project was very quiet. We didn't put out an update, and we didn't really talk to the community. So a lot of folks were assuming the project was dead. You know, being like early access has kind of a reputation, right? Like not everything in early access ships, and that's kind of like what you get with early access. Basically, with Delver, we've always tried, like every update, we tried to have the game in a spot where if we never updated it again, we would be okay. So it was always a complete experience, every update, but not every game is like that. And I understood, like after a year of, you know, like supporting my wife and, you know, supporting my first son, I noticed the community was pretty upset that we hadn't even said anything. So I actually started doing a regular Sunday development stream. That's kind of how I got into streaming. So this was kind of a way for me to talk to my community and to also just work. So I would kind of cover like this past week, what did we work on? And then I would say, okay, this is the thing that's on my plate that I think is interesting today. And I would do, you know, programming or 3D modeling or level design. And I would just interact with people. And I did that every Sunday for 18 months, which was a blast. I had a really good time doing that. And then my second son was born, and any time I had to do that just dropped off completely.
Yeah, I imagine that's got to be a gigantic challenge trying to balance all that out. Because that is, like you said, that is a lot of life in between trying to create a game. So,
yeah, like for the people who do it full time, they have the benefit of at least having, you know, 8 hours a day to work on a thing. But yeah, it's hard. Like I'm passionate, and I love making things. I love making art, and I love like making interactive art and games and other weird things and tools. Like I just have this very, very strong drive and passion to do it. So even right now, I'm getting the itch. Like I haven't had time to work on my stuff in a while. It'll come back. Calm, Joshua.
So Joshua, let's hear. So now you've come across, you know, you come through this 5 year experience, and what I'm always curious about is, you know, I know you've learned lessons on now. Are you going to apply those lessons to a new release or a different, you know, is there a Delver 2 possibly on the horizon, or is there a smaller project that's more manageable? I mean, do you think you're going to be working with your partner again on a new title? What's next?
Maybe. So, since we released, I left Microsoft to do the full indie freelance thing. And I've been doing contract work, on and again, off again, you know, as the nature of contract work is. And my partner, he actually works, he's working on the new, Torchlight game. So he has a full-time job as a game developer. So I think he's kind of scratching that itch at his day job. He said he would be happy to work on another project with me, but I would be the one kind of spearheading that. So I've kind of been like holding off on a bit, trying to figure out some good prototypes, because like when you want, like devoting a large amount of time with no financial return is kind of a hard thing to sell to my family. So I want to make sure that I know what I'm going to build before I build it, right? I do have ideas of what I want to work on. I think that the next big thing, and this might be, I don't know if we've really talked about it anywhere else, but we are probably in the near future, we're going to open source the Delver engine.
Oh, cool.
Oh, wow. That's very cool.
Yeah. And I've been trying in my free time to get some Graybox assets made for it. So folks could start making games kind of like out of the box. Like, so for Delver, modding has always been very important to us. And I want to say almost out of the gate, we've always shipped the editor with Delver, and we have a pretty healthy mod community that's been around almost as long as Delver has. And we have Steam Workshop integration, and there's all sorts of interesting things. Everything from, we have a German language translation mod, which is rad. We have a Zelda mod. We have like somebody who dumped in the Hotline Miami soundtrack. Sorry.
Oh, cool.
Devolver. So modding has been really important to us, and we wanted to open source the engine so people can see how we built the darn thing, because we did write our own engine, for better or for worse, and it's pretty darn easy to make games with the Delver engine if you have a basic understanding of how to structure JSON data and do some sprite art. You can actually you can make games.
So how does the game code, like, so it's just it's a JSON, what's the architecture of the scripting? In other words, like if you wanted to add some story, you know, kind of cutscenes and things like that, how would that work?
Well, so if you wanted to add a new item, you could just copy an existing item definition. So you give it a name and a damage range, and you give it an index to a sprite, and you just, you create the similar file in your mod and just include that chunk. And we just kind of smash them all together and let you play, kind of, Elder Scrolls style. So you can smash mini mods together, which is kind of cool.
Oh, that's very cool. But would you have something where you could do a story, kind of like a story with cutscenes and cameras and things like that? I'm just wondering how far people could push it and play around with it.
So for Delver out of the box, you can't really do cutscenes per se. A lot of the stories is done through notes and through like dialogue with NPCs.
Right.
With the open source engine, we give you it will be the full source code, so people could go crazy.
Okay. Cool. I just wondered if there was any additional functionality that would come, but it's basically the game that you guys shipped, but just friendlier to creating, you know, your own title, basically.
Yeah. So we were very inspired by how id handled. At least John Carmack handled a lot of their open sourcing of their engines. And not only did it give their games longevity, but I think a lot of folks got their kind of cut their teeth reading through the source code and trying to figure out how they did what they did.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, it's their generosity it lives for what, 22 years. I mean, Doom is still, you know, even stronger than Quake, really, as far as a community. But Quake, you know, after 22 years, people are still making tools for it and making amazing content. And it wouldn't have happened the other way, you know, if they had been closed in any way. And as they went on, they closed down the games a little more and they became a little bit less accessible. So I think, you know, once it got to Doom and Quake 4, even though that's really technically an id title, you know, it just became so difficult to create content anyway, even though the source was there. You know, it just became way too hard to do that. So good for you guys, because I know there's a real hunger out there. People like to fiddle around and it's like, oh, there's a new engine. Well, it's open source. I'm going to see what I can do and how far I can push it. So I think that's really smart too for Delver, you know, because it'll be a nice promotion for Delver in a way.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I kind of liken it to how my father always worked on these old cars. And I always asked him, like, why do you work on these old cars? And he's like, well, they don't have any computers in them and they're simple enough for me to understand. And I kind of feel the same way about some of these older, like, retro games. Like, the technology and creating the content isn't terribly hard. Like, for my day job, I am making, you know, slightly more modern, like assets for games. And it is more work. So it is nice to go back to, like, you know, Quake style or, you know, Delver style graphics where it is pretty darn quick just, you know, to make textures or to make models and not to worry too much about anything beyond that.
Yeah, sometimes simple is king, you know?
Certainly, especially like for us, like encouraging modding was a very big thing. And, you know, anybody has MS Paint, right? You can open up MS Paint and start scribbling stuff down and make new items, make new creatures. But having somebody load up like Photoshop or Blender, even though Blender is free, it's still a huge hurdle for people to get over.
I can attest to that because every time I've launched Blender, I've just gone, oh, Alt F4.
But to be fair, like any 3D package, there's going to be a large learning curve to it. Like I've spoken to you, Dump Truck, about video editing, and I've had a very similar experience with Photoshop or with Premiere. Like I'm very comfortable in Photoshop, and I'm kind of okay with Illustrator, and opening up Premiere just made my head explode.
Right, it's a totally different. I mean, you want some of those some of those concepts to translate, but they just can't. They just don't.
Nope.
unfortunately, from app to app. So, very cool. Hey, would you guys be interested in talking about the Quake Awards? Because you are both judges, and I'd love to hear Joshua's take on that.
Are you asking me why I didn't vote for you?
No, of course.
I'll tell him why.
I was going to say you guys probably have some inside dope that I'm not privy to. So no, but I, you know, RC was on the panel, as were you, and so I'd love to hear about your side and your experiences with that first Quake Awards, because I know we're going to do it again, next year. So let's hear some of your thoughts on that process.
Thanks for asking. I don't. It was interesting. I think they're important. I think awards, like some people think it's very like, I don't know, like self-congratulatory, but I think awards function as a nice way to reach out to people outside our community saying, hey, we are around and we are making amazing, beautiful, crazy stuff. And this is some of the stuff this past year that you should look at and pay attention to because it is awesome. And like a lot of us in the community, we could point out like, you know, like each year, like what was some of the highlights. But people outside have no idea. And like, this is what I use the CACO Awards for, is just looking at like what the Doom community is up to. And this is like a good, like, for, you know, like it is kind of reductive, but it's like, it's like a top 10 list of the Quake things I should play every year. And I think this is a good way to reach out to people who aren't as, you know, have a good ear on the Quake community. And I thought it was important to make that, or for that to be part of the Quake community. And, Shamblernot said, oh, if you think it's important, maybe you should be involved. And I guess I kind of ate crow on that a little bit. And I said, okay, sure.
Here's the third job.
That'll serve you up having good insights into things, you know.
More. Yeah. So I don't know. I think I brought it. I feel in some ways bad because, or maybe not. Maybe I shouldn't feel bad. Don't feel bad, Joshua. Like, I don't really understand the current Quake meta very well. Like, I play Quake, but I don't like live it and breathe it like some folks do. So I kind of came from it more of like a kind of a generalist gaming perspective and just things I thought were beautiful and unique and like I'd never seen before. Maybe, you know, it wasn't as unique, you know, in the grand, like, you know, 20 some odd years of Quake's history. But for the maps I saw there, I tried to pick the ones I thought kind of represented the Quake community in its creativity and brilliance, really.
Yeah, I can second that. I mean, coming as a second judge on the Quake Awards for myself, the way I looked at everything was I usually look at everything from the player's perspective. So that's how I was looking at these maps, is like which maps for me were really fun and which ones were pretty, that kind of thing. Like I really went to brass tacks as to like how my judging worked on those. But I completely agree with you with what you said as far as like the awards being something for maybe not outsiders, but people on the fringe to look at, to see, you know, what Quake is currently up to. The CACO Awards are great every year. You know, they always showcase some amazing stuff every year. I'm just like, oh my God, there's so many cool things in the Doom community. So I think it's great that Quake gets this too, because there's still so many great maps being released and, you know, people are still creating tools like yourself. Trench Broom is a huge thing.
Trench Broom is amazing.
Yeah, it's a glorious program. I mean, it even helped me create a couple maps. That's saying something. So, regardless, though, I think the Quake Awards were a really big success, at least for me. And as far as Dump Truck saying, like, we're on the inside of, like, some whatever information, I got to say, everybody during the Quake Awards was very behaved, very friendly. I didn't see any trash talking. I didn't see, like, none of that stuff. It was all just very, I got to say, for lack of a better word, very professional.
Yeah, I would agree. At least on the judges' side of things, it was very professional. The thing that would break my heart, though, would be, like, Chamberlain, I would say, hey, Joshua, there's, like, a tie on these maps, and we need you to play and tell us which one's better, and they're both really good.
Right.
And I'm thinking, oh, no. Oh, no.
How can you possibly pick? I mean,
I know. So then I would kind of default to, like, what was the category, which one kind of adhered best to it, is kind of how I went when I was presented with those choices.
I got to say, you know, as someone who was, and we've talked about this before, but I was sort of critical of the Quake Awards early on. And then I kind of came around and was like, you know, this is going to be a positive experience as long as, you know, there were some certain things that were kind of tweaked. And then to my satisfaction, that things that had changed or weren't going to be the way they were in the conversation. So once they kind of got rolling and they were asking for submission, I was already on board and happy that this was happening. But I will say that I didn't hear of any hurt feelings or anybody, you know, having sour grapes at all. I thought it was all around. It was if somebody felt that way, they sure didn't vocalize that either on Discord or on Funk Message Board that I know of. And I think everyone kind of came around to it in the community. And so, I mean, it can only get better from there, you know?
I certainly hope so. Like, I think Chamberlain was right in the fact that we just had to do it. Like, you can plan and you can hem and haw about doing something, but I think just jumping in and doing it and then, now we know what we did wrong, and now we know what we can improve, gives us a starting point, right? Like, the blank canvas is the worst thing in the world. And I think just getting this first one done, it probably, to be honest, won't be the best ran Quake Awards, but I think every year is going to get better. And hopefully, like, my game developer hat is on. Hopefully we can use, like, the categories to incentivize, like, not only the content that we've seen, but the content we want to see, like, the next year. Like, if we create categories that people don't really make a lot for, maybe that will encourage folks to kind of shoot that direction. Or, I don't know, I'm just trying to think of, like, not only do we reward stuff, but to encourage things. Like, for me, as a programmer and artist, I want to see more weird mods, and I want to see more weird art. I love the mapping community because they do crazy things without the support of programmers and artists. But I want to pull more programmers and artists in to really support the mappers.
I can't agree with you more. I would, and I think that, you know, not to nag you, because this is not this is not my intention to nag you, but I think that's why the Blender integration is so important, because it'll take someone like myself to say, okay, there's a tool that I can have good IO. I can learn a modern tool that's going to be, there'll be tons of tutorials. I'll be able to kind of fill in all those weird blanks to make a model, you know, and maybe even a creature now that I'm messing around with Quake C, you know. So I think it's so important that I think the tools are driving this stuff, because Trench Broom, I would not be sitting here if I had not fired up Trench Broom 1, you know, a few years ago and just got hooked again on mapping, you know, because it's such a solid experience, and it was kind of what I was waiting for, you know, it was what I was hoping for. I started mapping, Quake mapping with Quest. And I don't know if you remember Quest, Joshua, but it was the early kind of interface for, now I'm going to blank on the was it 3D Studio Max or was it, Lightwave? It was more of like Lightwave.
Okay.
So Lightwave 3D, very primitive, obviously DOS version of it. But, That tool hooked me, and then so Trench Broom, you know, fast forward 20 years later, and you have that right tool. But if you or someone else could make this translation between the Quake engine to Blender and back something that was reliable and approachable, we might be able to see some of that stuff, you know. And so I agree 100%. If those tools are there, and we kind of incentivize, you know, hey, look, you know, so and so is doing modeling now as opposed to mapping. I don't know. I've got a wish list like two pages long of what I'd like to see happen with Quake, but that's, I think I'd say that's the top right there. Cause especially I saw you making that pumpkin on your stream for the Halloween jam. And I was like, God, I really need to dive into that stuff. That would be so cool to have that skill.
Yeah, no, it is super handy. And right now that's how I put, I mean, that's how I'm earning my keep. So yeah, I think it maybe because Quake models are fairly low poly, I think you can also bring in new modelers into the scene as well, because if you know a little bit about 3D modeling, like you said, you can crank out Quake models relatively quickly.
Very and then cool. You got to write the AI and you got to do all that stuff. And yeah, it's a whole ball of wax, I'm assuming, right?
It is a whole ball of wax. But I got to say, once you get the animation, I really think that, you know, for someone who hasn't done it, I'm kind of, but I know enough about the process, and especially now that Quake C, I've been working with the zombie, oh my God, the zombie stuff lately. And so now I kind of have an idea. I'm like, okay, it's not like overnight. You can't just plug and play, but it is something you could do. You need the animation frame first, really. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Joshua, you need the animation frames to exist. So that's kind of the hard part, you know, get that. And then you can get a coder or perhaps code yourself the different routines that call those animations. So it's not, I don't think it's unreachable, you know?
Oh, certainly not. You know, I started my game dev, I guess, experiences or like forays back when the internet was still pretty new. So we kind of were expected to do everything ourselves, especially if we're going to be independent. You had to do the art, you had to do the programming. That's kind of the mindset I'm still in, for better or for worse. But I think there's plenty of room for people to hand off to a programmer saying, hey, here is a model, you know, have at it, right? Like you can do it yourself, but you shouldn't have to.
Well, I will say someone just did that. Do I have the zip on my desktop? I need to go back through there. Yeah, Uthuk is a creature that was created by a modeler who kind of just popped in the scene, and he didn't have the Quake C chop, so he just basically took the Shambler file and kind of animated his, you know, the same different setups for the Shambler with this new creature. But so there are people out there that are a little hungry for this stuff. But those are few and far between. So I'd say if we did need more people, it'd be modelers and then, yeah, coders, or at least coders who can do tutorials for me.
Sure. Yeah. So for me, this is kind of wrapping back around then. Maybe so for maybe the next year's Quake Awards, we put categories out there to promote programming and modeling. And if people see there aren't very many entries, maybe that encourages people to go that direction. I don't know. That's like me wearing a behavioral hat, which I really shouldn't be wearing because I have no background in that. But
whatever. Well, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. It's a good idea.
Well, Joshua, I got a couple more questions for you before we go here.
Sure.
I know that you're a very busy guy from what it sounds like here.
Are you picking up my children in the back? Sorry.
I was just going to say, perfect timing for me to say that, and then we hear the kids in the back. But do you have any time left over for gaming yourself? Like, is it mostly family time, or do you get a chance to play anything contemporary that's been coming out? Anything that stands out to you?
Oh my goodness. So kind of is my answer. Like, I don't really have big stretches of time. I do make a time, an old colleague, a work colleague of mine, and I play games every Wednesday night. So they tend to be co-op games, and they kind of just a gamut of whatever supports co-op play. And that's kind of what I'm into lately. For a while there, I've been trying to like plug my way through various old games. Like, I tried playing through, I was working on Thief for a while, but I just, again, my free time evaporated. So if I'm not working, I'm definitely with my family now.
Wait,
that's good though.
What co-op games are you playing? I want to hear.
Yeah.
what co-op games? So we were playing Fortnite before it blew up. And then when it did blow up, we just got really terrible. So we switched to Sea of Thieves, which nobody was playing. So we had a fun time just sailing around, goofing off. We played all the way through Portal 2, which is all right. And now we played through Destiny 2. A lot of sequels, apparently. And then now we are just kind of goofing off in No Man's Sky. It's mostly just a way for me to kind of hang out with my buddy and just, you know, play games. And
No Man's Sky is a good way to spend your time, in my opinion. That's a lot.
Yeah, it's just looking at red space stuff and just catching up with a buddy. Like that's pretty low key. Like I don't need, like I like that it's not a challenge. It's just me just kind of cruising around, and that's fine.
Now that fits my personality and my play style.
Certainly, yeah, because I noticed like when we were playing Destiny 2, we were more focused on actually playing the game and less about talking. And now that we're playing No Man's Sky, we definitely talk a lot more.
Yeah, that's kind of nice. I've always been a big supporter of games that are kind of just casual and fun, and you can kind of kick back and enjoy what you're doing, you know, with a friend, or even if you just want to unwind by yourself. I play a few of those games on my channel now and then, and you know, they don't get many views. We'll just say that.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, that's hard trying to chase, like, you know, what your viewers want to see, especially like as for myself as a streamer, I've been trying to find a good identity, and it's hard, right? Like you want to do what you're passionate about, but you want to also, you know, cater to the following you have built.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's impossible to please everybody, of course, but you know, I'm always doing these videos for certain more casual or more, we'll say, more vibrant games compared to Quake. And I think they fall flat just because, you know, people expect dark and gritty, which is fun, too. But sometimes I'm like, I need something bright, guys. I need something fun and cheery.
I totally get it. That's why for me, for working on Delver for 5 years, like Delver is a bright and cheery game. And, you know, being like neck deep in Delver for 5 years, I think that helped me survive. Like I like dark games too, but like making dark art for 5 years probably would have burned me out.
Yeah, that makes sense. I got one more question for you here, Joshua.
Okay.
Do you have any advice for people getting into game development? What they can expect, or maybe a direction to go? Someone who's on the outside, maybe thinking about it as maybe a career or even software development, maybe.
Sure. Yeah, those are similar questions. So like for software development, I just have a general computer science degree because I wanted to have just like a non-game specific degree to have like a more broad, like, I guess, selection of things I could do, which I guess I have done. I think making games is interesting. It's like playing in a band, right? Like not everybody is going to be like a huge success, but I think people get like, for me, like making games is almost as enjoyable as playing them. Like there is just a certain like sense of accomplishment and satisfaction you get making a creative thing and like expressing a thing. And then especially when other people play it, they're like, man, I really get what you're doing there. Like that's just, it's a really weird kind of connection. And I try to stay like pretty close to my community. Like there are zero layers in between the people who play my games and me, which is kind of cool. It's also kind of hard at times when people give me tough feedback. but yeah, no, I would say just right now is a great time to start making games. Don't plan on like quitting your day job, but if you can make games on the side, there are so many good, like there's Unity and there's Unreal and there's Godot and there are so many good engines just to kind of offload the things you don't want to do. Like they can do a lot of the, like the networking or the rendering. If you just want to just like slap stuff together and make a fun experience, try it out. See if you just like it. You know, and there are always, for example, there are always game jams. Like we have jams to make maps in the Quake community. Like there is, I guarantee you now, if you Google, like, what is a game jam right now, you could find a game jam to participate in. And I would suggest there, just find a small team, find people who have different disciplines and work with them in a short time period to make a thing. And, you know, that's a good way to get going. I did small jams and I did mods and I did, you know, experimental Stranger Things before I actually got to where I am now.
That's great advice, honestly. No, for sure. I was listening to hear if there's anything else because I was like, man, this is all really, really good advice for anybody new.
Just go what you're passionate with, but also have a backup plan.
Good words to live by, right? I mean, for everyone.
Yeah, I guess. It's worked okay for me.
To see more of what Joshua might be up to, follow him on Twitter at Joshua Skelly. And for more of his work, you can check him out at joshuaskelton.com. Also note, the music we're currently listening to is from his game Delver. Check it out on Steam, Delver. This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dumptruck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for Dumptruck_DS.
Expect for the fall.
Lucky you, you have weather. It's like it's been in the close to the 80s today, so in California.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. No, not the 80s. Yeah.